from nowhere he could see.
That's magic? Magic? You think that's magic? It's plumbing, you numbskull.
Plumbing. Corin repeated the word slowly.
What is plumbing?
Carefully, hesitatingly, he touched the pipe with a finger, then drew back. It hadn't hurt. Cully himself had only a vague idea of what plumbing was and how it worked, but he wasn't going to let Corin know that.
There's water pipes like this running lots of places in the castle, and especially in the palace. It comes from the river. And there's wheels and,
he guessed,
pumps and stuff that push the water along. So when you open the tap, water comes out.
Isn't this high off the ground? Corin held the pipe firmly, feeling it vibrate as water flowed out.
Cully scratched his head. I heard this is about as high as it can go, which is why there isn't as much water coming out here as there would be if the tap was on the first floor. The water gets, I don't know, tired from climbing up the pipe, or something like that.
He shrugged. Corin smiled. Water didn't get tired. Cully didn't know as much as he pretended. He turned the valve experimentally, and the water stopped flowing. Without the water splashing, he saw that the tub hadn't been filling, because the water was running down a drain hole in the bottom. The draining water swirled around faster and faster, like a whirlpool in a fast-running stream.
Where does the water go?
He asked, relieved that he wouldn't need to haul buckets of soapy bathwater back down the stairs either. This was a question Cully knew the answer to, because he had asked the same question when his family first came to the castle.
Down to a pipe in the ground, to another big pipe under the courtyard. Then it goes down the hill to a marsh next to the river. The water coming out of the castle is, dirty, which is not good to dump into the river, so it goes through the marsh first. And that cleans it somehow. Before it gets to the river, it's all pretty smart. The Royal Engineers take care of the plumbing. They had the whole courtyard tore up a couple of years ago to replace pipes.
He wrinkled his nose at the memory.
It kind of stunk bad for a few days, of course. The royals all went to the countryside that time. Can't have the quality around while the castle's all tore up.
But you had to stay here, Corin asked sympathetically.
Oh, yeah, brother, don't you know it. When the royals and all the other high and mighties leave the castle, that's when the hard work gets done. Like to broke my back hauling stones this summer when the princess went, well, you know, on her tour. The royals always get out of the palace in the summer, because it gets too hot here. The princess has a couple summer palaces up in the hills where it's cool. I've never seen them places. They must be nice.
Corin thought Duke Yaron's castle was the most fabulous place he'd ever imagined, until he came to Linden and saw the royal castle. The palace inside the castle walls where the royals lived was grander still. And he didn't remember Duke Yaron's castle having plumbing. He had bathed there in a small metal tub, although servants had brought the hot water to him, along with scented soaps and freshly cleaned towels. Now it was back to reality for Corin Bladewell. He glanced around the bathroom.
"Does the wizard always bathe in cold water?"
he asked, shivering at the thought of being in that stone room during winter, taking a cold bath. In warm weather, Corin's family had bathed in a swimming hole in the creek that ran through the farm. The water came out of a spring up the hills to the east and was always chilly. Only in winter did the tub get hauled out of the attic and set up in the kitchen for bathing.
"What? No, you bird brain," Cully said, rolling his eyes.
Corin wondered if the other boy would eventually run out of different ways to say Corin was stupid. Cully nudged the metal box under the tub with his foot.
"That's the heater for the tub. And see that stovepipe going up the wall? It goes through that box up there.
Cully pointed to the ceiling above the tub,
where the rinsing water is. You pull this chain here and, he demonstrated, warm water pours all over you to rinse off the soap.
Corin shook his head in amazement. This plumbing was truly incredible. How did people think of such things? The contrast between people who had luxuries like plumbing and people like himself could scarcely have been greater.
"Nothing but the best for the quality folk," Cully grumbled jealously. "Come on, I'll show you how the heater works."
The other side of the heater was a wood stove, in a room behind the bathroom's wall. Cully explained that Corin would need to fire up the stove in the mornings and run water into the tub to prepare the wizard's bath in the mornings.
"He takes a bath every morning?"
"Sure," Cully nodded. "All the quality folk do that. You'll need to wash up every day too."
Corin's eyebrows fairly met his hairline.
"I have to take a bath every day?"
His head was spinning. Perhaps being a wizard's servant was much harder than he had imagined.
"No. Well, if you're going to the palace to carry messages for the wizard, then you'll need to be clean. They can't have the likes of you and me stinking up the place. And you'll need to wear clean clothes with a freshly pressed shirt."
"Oh, don't worry about that,"
Cully hastened to add when he saw the other boy's distress.
"There's a royal laundry you can use. That's where you'll do the wizard's laundry too. Most days, unless you're going to the palace, you can just wash your face and hands."
Cully winked.
"And that's good enough. But make sure you wash the back of your hands and scrub under your fingernails. They check that. The quality don't miss anything. Not if they could complain about it."
Corin looked skeptically at the wood stove. He would have to haul wood up the stairs. During the winter, it would be best to keep a small fire going all the time, with the coals banked to the side, so the heater didn't have to start cold. All that metal would take a long time to heat up.
"Can't the wizard just..."
He waved vaguely toward the bathroom.
"Heat the water by himself, with a spell or something."
"Oh, sure."
Cully nodded knowingly. "I've seen him do that once, when the heater box was being fixed. But he says it takes a lot of effort, even for a master wizard. And once he's in the tub and the water starts getting cold, he can't use the spell on the water with him in it, could he?"
Cully winked.
"I guess not."
Corin frowned. He knew absolutely nothing, maybe less than nothing, about magic. Cully slapped Corin on the shoulder again.
"You can count on me, bucko. We servants need to stick together. The quality takes enough advantage of us by themselves."
Cully glanced at the window.
"Sun's getting low. I'd best be going. You know where the candles are. You'll be all right tonight. The wizard should be back in a few days. Take care of yourself, and don't touch anything."
Cara Falco just happened to be around the corner when Corin left the wizard's tower the next morning. Just happened to be there. Just happened to be wearing his oldest, shabbiest set of clothing, and just happened to be carrying two delicious sticky buns. He just happened to have been waiting there for half an hour, growing impatient for the servant boy to come out of the tower.
"Oh, hello. Corin, is it?"
Kyra said with what he hoped would be seen as a cheery smile.
Corin bowed his head formally.
"Good morning, Your Grace."
"Call me Kaya, please. I'm so tired of all that sire and Your Grace and Your Highness stuff. Who can keep track of it?"
"It seemed to be important to you yesterday,"
Corin said warily. He still did not know how to deal with royalty. It was a new experience for him.
"Oh, that. Sorry about that. My father's advisor made me memorize the ducal bloodlines yesterday. My head was so full of names that are supposed to be so important."
Kaya rolled his eyes. And I didn't recognize the Bladewells. Would you like a sticky bun? The kitchen gave me two of them. Yes, thank you.
Pedras was out somewhere with the army. Corin had slept in the tower by himself. The only thing he'd eaten the previous night was the remains of the loaf of bread Cully had brought. He didn't yet know where to go in the castle for food. Where is the kitchen?
Kaya couldn't help frowning.
What a backwater oaf Corin was. Didn't know his way around the castle at all.
Then he covered his frown with a smile.
Come on, I'll show you. It's in the back of the dining hall. Do you ride? I was on my way to the stables. I feel like riding this morning.
The stables were in the opposite direction from the wizard's tower, but Corin didn't know that.
What say I show you around the city?
Corin hesitated.
I think I'm supposed to be cleaning the tower. Oh, you can do that later. Lord Salva isn't expected back for several days. I hear he helped the army win a smashing victory. Should be a grand parade when the soldiers come back into the city.
Corin replied around a mouthful of sticky bun.
I'd love to ride a horse, Your Grace.
His first morning in the castle was shaping up very well indeed. The royal stables were so large and grand that, when seeing them from the outside, Corin at first thought the building was part of the palace. Inside, Kaya introduced Corin to the stable master, loudly letting everyone know that Corin was his friend, and a guest of the Falcos that day, since Corin would normally only be allowed in the royal stables to care for the wizard's horse. They walked over to the stall where Kaya's horse was stabled, and Corin admired the animal while they put bridle and saddle on. The horse was a deep chestnut brown, with a white blaze on its forehead.
See this blaze? It has the shape of a falcon. See the wings here? These horses are bred in my family's stables in Berwick, Kaya announced with great pride.
Corin thought the white blaze on the horse's forehead looked more like a blob of spilt milk than a falcon. But he didn't say so.
Now, we need a horse for you. Kaya snapped his fingers. Stable hand, you there. Come here, good fellow. We need a horse for Corin, the wizard's personal and most trusted servant, you know.
Corin almost blushed with pride as Kaya talked.
A gentle horse, to get you settled. These horses are bred and trained for war. They're not like the nags you're used to on the farm.
They were interrupted by a commotion several stalls down the stable. A horse was snorting and kicking the walls, rearing up its hind legs as three stable hands struggled to hold onto the reins. The horse was black, pure black, and a good two hands taller at the shoulder than even Kaya's horse. As Kaya led his horse out of the stall, the great black horse lashed out with a foreleg, knocking over two of the stable hands, and broke free, charging down the stable row toward Corin. In a panic, Kaya hurled himself into the stall, pulling his horse in with him. Corin flattened himself against the wall, but something made him reach out a hand to brush against the black horse's flank as it raced by. The horse skidded to a halt on the well-worn floor, and turned its head to look at Corin. It snorted, not threateningly, not friendly, merely curious.
Good horse, good horse,
Corin said in a soothing voice, and he walked forward, despite the stable hands behind him shouting that the horse was dangerous, for him to get away and run for his life. The horse stood still, its nostrils flaring, tilting its head side to side, unsure of the boy walking slowly closer. The horse lowered its head and allowed Corin to touch its muzzle. A shiver ran down the horse's spine as Corin laid his hand on it.
They have the bit too tight, don't they?
Corin said, as he undid the bridle and let it fall to the straw on the floor. The horse tossed its head and whinnied like a pony, shivering from nose to tail.
Impulsively, Corin climbed up the wall of the stable, got a firm handful of the horse's mane, and swung himself onto the horse's back. The stable hands gasped as Corin prodded the horse to gently walk down to the end of the stable and back to its stall. He let himself drop to the ground in front of the stable master, who was staring, open-mouthed, with shock.
"Sir, the bit was cutting his lip," Corin explained, as if it were the most obvious thing under the sun.
"Wizard servant, eh? I don't wonder if you have a spot of the wizard in you, too. No one has been able to ride that horse, lad. He's been nothing but trouble since the day he was born."
The stable master held out his hand, but the horse shied away until Corin patted his muzzle.
"You rode Thunderbolt?"
Kaya gaped at Corin with amazement.
"Aye, that he did, young sire," the stable master agreed. "Son of King Adric's own horse, Thunderbolt is, or we'd not have kept him around with the trouble he's been. Got the very devil in him, he does. Least until this morning."
One of the stable hands ran up to the stable master and whispered something in the man's ear, and the stable master turned and bowed deeply.
"Princess Ariana, welcome to the royal stables."
Kaya bowed to the princess, who was accompanied by her usual retinue of guards and maids.
"Your Highness, good morning."
Ariana gave Kaya only a brief glance. She only had eyes for Corin. She thought that he looked even better in his rough work clothes than in the fine outfit he had been wearing in the royal carriage.
"Your Grace," she said dismissively to Kaya. "Hello, Corin."
Corin snickered, suppressing a laugh.
"What's so funny?"
Ariana demanded.
"Your Highness, Your Grace."
Corin did his best to imitate the royal court's chief of protocol, an overly self-important man he'd met the day before. Ariana laughed.
"It is silly, isn't it? Especially when we're in the stables, with our royal feet stepping in horse manure."
She turned to Kaya.
"Good morning, Kaya."
Kaya was almost struck speechless, but he managed to say,
"Good morning, Ariana,"
in a near whisper. And he was smart enough to say only that, without gushing about how lovely she was, how pleased he was to see her. This was one of those moments when, his advisor Fawn said, fewer words were better than more.
"What is going on here, Master of Horses?"
Ariana resumed some of her royal princess authority when she addressed the stable master. The stable master snatched off his cap and bowed again to the princess.
"Beg your pardon, princess, but today I'm not the master of horses. Young Corin here is. Tamed Thunderbolt, he did. I never thought I would live to see the day a man could ride that horse, but the boy here did. Got that devil horse walking like a pony."
Ariana grew even more impressed with Corin. She walked over to Thunderbolt's stall and reached out to pet the horse's nose. Thunderbolt gave a warning snort and backed away, until Corin came to stand beside Ariana and held out his hand to the horse.
"Good, Thunderbolt. Good boy."
The horse held out his head for Corin to scratch him under the chin and allowed Ariana to pet him.
"Corin, I don't know what to say. Thunderbolt has been a trial for the stable hands since the day he was born."
Ariana scratched Thunderbolt under the chin, and the horse closed his eyes in contentment.
"Stable master, I grant this horse to Corin Bladewell."
Young lady, that is, your highness, I don't know..."
The stable master stammered in surprise.
"I am the Crown Princess of Terador, am I not? And Thunderbolt is my royal property."
"That he is, your highness," the stable master admitted. Ariana turned to Corin and almost gave the surprised boy a hug, catching herself at the last moment.
That would be most un-princess-like behavior, so she wrapped her arms around the horse's neck instead. Oh, Corin, I'm so happy for you. You'll have to feed him and exercise him and care for him every day.
I will, Corin said, his head bobbing up and down with delight. Can I ride him now? Please, Arianna. Kaya was going to take me riding to show me the city.
Arianna looked at Kaya warily. What game was the Falco heir playing with her friend? But Kaya disarmed her with a wry smile.
Corin wanted me to show him where the kitchens were first, of course, but I thought, since Lord Salva isn't here, Corin could have a bit of fun this morning.
Corin was looking at her so pleadingly that Arianna smiled. She would have preferred to ride without Kaya Falco.
As I am in my riding clothes, the princess decided, yes, let's all take a turn about the city, shall we?
Kaya strode back into his quarters in the palace, where Niles Fawn was, as usual, sitting by the window, reading a dusty old book. When he saw Kaya, Fawn snapped the book shut and stood.
How was your morning, young sire?
A triumph, Fawn. A total and complete triumph, Kaya said with a twinkle in his eye, and he pulled off his riding gloves and tossed them on the floor for the servants to pick up later. Corin now considers me his friend. Arianna called me by my first name, and the three of us went riding about the city this morning. And Arianna allowed me to help her get down off her horse several times. She even invited me to the opening of that maze she had built out in the old gardens.
Kaya paused, lost in thought.
What sort of attire is proper to wear in a royal maze?
I shall inquire in the court.
Fawn beamed with happiness. Duke Falco would be very pleased to receive this report.
Might I suggest, as a gesture of your new friendship, that you send your servants over to the wizard's tower to help the boy clean the place before Lord Salva returns?
A smashing idea, Fawn, smashing. Yes, let's do that. In fact,
Kaya paused,
I will go with them myself.
Always wanted to see the inside of that tower, and I'll make sure my servants don't steal anything.
Kaya was in such a joyous mood that even the idea of directing cleaning servants for the afternoon didn't seem so bad.
You know, Fawn, it's too bad Corin is so low-born. He's not a bad sort at all. I actually enjoyed myself this morning. He's so grateful for anyone of consequence to pay the least attention to him. It is kind of pathetic.
Did you know Corin managed to ride Thunderbolt? Arianna granted the horse to him right on the spot. Amazing it was.
I'm sure it was, young sire. Remember, please, he is low-born and not from any sort of good family. Corin Bladewell is a tool to be used, nothing more.
Kaya frowned.
You always have to remind me of my duties, don't you?
Kaya clapped his hands loudly.
Servants, bring me something to eat. The heir to the Falco line is hungry.
The wizard's tower, except for the chambers Pedras had protected with a locking spell so no one could enter, had been scrubbed clean from top to bottom. Corin could not express how grateful he was that Kaya had brought his servants to the tower to help clean the place, and when the regent heard what the Falco boy had done, Carlana sent the royal chambermaids to help also. Corin had mostly been instructed, politely but firmly by the other servants, that the tower would be cleaned faster if he stood out of the way and didn't help. So Corin and Kaya had a grand time exploring the tall, narrow, and forbidding tower, all the way to the platform on the roof, where there was a view over all the palace, the castle, and the city of Linden, out to the countryside, and the hills to the east. On the way down the stairs, Corin paused to think a moment, but didn't say anything to Kaya. After everyone had left, he climbed back up to the roof, then counted steps all the way to the doorway on the bottom. Out in the courtyard, he looked at the tower. The windows were not evenly spaced. but something was wrong.
He would have to ask the wizard about it when Pedrus returned.
The next morning, after going to the royal stables to feed and brush Thunderbolt, Corrin stopped by the kitchens for breakfast. When he returned to the wizard's tower in mid-morning, he found a servant dressed in the uniform of the royal palace, waiting for him. The servant carried a handwritten note from Ariana, inviting him to join her for lunch in the palace. Promptly at noon, having scrubbed himself clean, wearing clean and freshly pressed clothes, and his hair untangled as best he could get it, Corrin presented himself at the servant's entrance to the palace. The guards were skeptical, even when Corrin showed them Ariana's invitation. He waited 10 minutes before Charles Fusting, the royal chief of protocol, arrived, mumbling,
most irregular indeed.
With a look that suggested the man thought Corrin was very likely to steal something valuable if he were allowed inside the palace gates, Fusting examined Corrin's clothes, tugging the tunic sleeves, brushing bits of lint off, before giving up with an exasperated sigh.
There is nothing to be done here. Nothing. It's hopeless. I can't work miracles.
Fusting turned and escorted Corrin inside the palace. Upstairs, downstairs, through long, wide corridors where their footsteps echoed against the high ceilings, past grand public rooms, Corrin hurried behind the chief of protocol, almost tripping over his own feet because he was too busy gawking at the opulent building and not paying attention to where he was going. The palace was full of people, guards posted outside nearly every door, servants scurrying around on errands, and various nobles ranging from squires to knights and barons. Not knowing what else to do, Corrin followed the example of the chief of protocol and bowed to people when Fusting bowed. While passing down a particularly grand hallway, lined with paintings of previous kings and queens of Tarador, Corrin drifted to a stop. The men and women in the pictures, so regal, so grand, all appeared to be looking directly at him. Fusting stopped in front of a wide, double door flanked by two guards.
There, dear me. What shall I call you?
Corrin Bladewell, sir?
No, no. Your title, I mean. You're the wizard's servant, but of course, one doesn't announce servants. Servants aren't supposed to be invited to dine with royalty either.
The chief of protocol grumbled under his breath. Corrin had an idea.
I'm Corrin Bladewell of Crichton, if you please, sir.
Fusting snapped his fingers.
Of course you are.
He called out in a clear voice,
Corrin Bladewell of Crichton, here to see the Crown Princess.
Corrin was expecting lunch with the Crown Princess to be stiff and formal, with a different fork to be used for each course. Instead, he found Ariana sitting in a sunlit room that overlooked the courtyard garden, attended only by a maid. When she saw Corrin, she ran to him and hugged him in a most undignified manner, while Charles Fusting looked away in everlasting horror. The chief of protocol backed away with a bow and scurried out the door, muttering to himself, his face white. When the door closed behind him, Ariana and Corrin burst into laughter.
Most irregular, most irregular.
Corrin imitated the fussy Fusting.
Oh, never mind him,
Ariana laughed. My mother says he's in charge of all the things that aren't important around the palace. She pointed to the table, covered by plates piled high with food.
Are you hungry? Let's eat first. I want to show you around the palace.
The palace was even bigger than Corrin imagined, one room after another, until Corrin was completely lost.
Does the palace ever end? Kyr told me it was big, but...
Kyr Falco?
Ariana looked unhappy. Corrin, you need to be careful about Kyr. The Falcos and the Trehames are not friends. You know the history of our families? Corrin shook his head.
No.
Apparently, he didn't know much of anything.
the Falcos used to be the rulers of Tarador, until 700 years ago.
Corin was completely surprised.
What happened? The Falcos were the strongest of the 7 ducal families who broke away from Isidore, and Dagon Falco was chosen to be the first king of Tarador. At first, the Falcos were good rulers, I guess.
Arianna shrugged to show she wasn't convinced.
But then they became lazy, and cared only about gold and jewels and building bigger palaces.
Arianna self-consciously touched her diamond necklace.
The Falcos built this big palace. We Trehames just live here. Anyway, Luis Falco was king 700 years ago, and he was terrible. Fat and lazy, he didn't take care of the army. Isidore attacked, and they got all the way here. They surrounded the castle and destroyed the city. Luis Falco locked himself in the palace and hid under his bed. Well, maybe not really, but he didn't do anything useful. Some of the dukes of Tarador fled. They thought the battle was lost. But Duke Aldous Trehame, my ancestor, rallied what was left of the army, and they fell upon the enemy at night during a terrible rainstorm. The enemy was surprised and defeated. When he got to the palace, Duke Trehame found that Luis Falco had been killed by an assassin, and King Falco had no heir. Luis's brother claimed the throne, and in the confusion, several army commanders declared their support for him. Then it was discovered, of course, that the cornerstone had been stolen during the battle. That ended any support for the Falcos. They had lost the cornerstone. The dukes then chose Aldous Trehame to be their king, and Trehames have been the royal family ever since. And ever since, the Falcos have been scheming to reclaim the throne. That includes Kaer. Be careful around Kaer. I don't trust him.
Corin considered both that Kaer had been nice to him, and that Arianna had been nice and was the crown princess. He's just a friend, and I'm just a servant. I couldn't help him, even if I wanted to. And I don't, he hastened to add.
Arianna, what is the cornerstone?
Arianna put her hands to her mouth and gasped.
You don't know about the lost cornerstone of Isidore?
No. Stories about ancient history aren't something that put food in your belly on a farm in Crichton, Corin said defensively.
But everyone knows the legend of the lost cornerstone. Wait, the chamber is right down this hallway. I'll show you.
Arianna reached to grab hold of Corin's hand, and she received a warm tingling feeling. A good feeling. Behind them, Norelka discreetly looked the other way. Arianna tugging a boy by the hand was not proper behavior for a princess. The Crown Princess led the way down a corridor that was part of the original fortress. The walls were plain stone, the floor not covered in fancy rugs. They passed through several doorways, and at the end of the hallway came to a pair of heavy wooden doors. There used to be guards here all the time, but my grandfather put an end to that. What's the sense in guarding something that has already been lost? The door is only locked at night. People don't come in here like they used to. She tugged on one of the large metal door handles.
Help me, Corin. It's heavy, and the hinges need to be oiled.
With the two of them pulling, the door swung ponderously open. Inside, Corin was surprised to see a large, empty stone chamber with a high vaulted ceiling. In the ceiling were windows, which allowed sunlight to shine down upon a low, flat slab of stone that filled the center of the room. Their footsteps echoed in the emptiness.
I don't get it. There's nothing here.
The floor was covered with a layer of dust, and cobwebs shone in the sunlight from the windows.
Of course not, silly. This is where the cornerstone used to be, before it was lost.
Arianna hopped up onto the stone slab.
It was right here, before it was stolen. See, you can still tell where the cornerstone rested.
Corin saw there were marks on the slab. He paced the corners.
Wow. It was huge. It would barely fit through those doors. See the scratches on the floor, leading toward the doors? That's where the enemy dragged the cornerstone across the floor.
Corin looked around the chamber. There were no other doors, and the windows, far above, were too small. But the other doors down the hallway are single doors. Too narrow. How did the enemy get it out of the castle?
Arianna raised her hands. That's the mystery. No one knows. It couldn't have fit through the doors in the hallway, but it isn't here, so it must have been taken away. Most people think it is still here, in the castle somewhere. It's far too heavy to move without an army. This whole chamber was built around it, after the cornerstone was brought here.
What's so important about this cornerstone, anyway?
It's the original cornerstone, the first stone laid down when the castle was built for the first king of Isildur, when our people came across the sea. When the Dark One seized power in Isildur, much of the castle was knocked down, and during the battle, our army took the cornerstone and hauled it away to Tarador on a great wagon, pulled by a dozen oxen. Legend says Isildur will not be restored to our people until the cornerstone is returned. So the enemy stole it and hid it somewhere. My mother says without the cornerstone, any talk of defeating Isildur is foolishness, and that is why she doesn't like it when Pedras tells her she has to send the army out to fight.
All these heavy adult decisions were going to be hers in only a few years. Corin got down on his knees and studied the scrape marks that were cut into the stone floor. Something about it wasn't right. He rose and stepped onto the pedestal where the cornerstone used to rest. His skin tingled, and he stepped back.
Why do people think it's still here in the castle?
Because, Arianna bit her lips, trying to recall her history lessons.
I think the enemy was only in the castle for a few hours before Aldous Trehame counterattacked to throw Isildur out. There wasn't enough time for the cornerstone to have been hauled away.
The Crown Princess held her hands out and shrugged.
Nobody knows.
I have an idea, she said, with a mischievous grin. We could look for it.
Us? You and me?
Sure, why not? It will be fun.
Corin looked around the empty chamber.
Where would we start?
Arianna had no idea.
I don't know.
Wait, we can search the scrolls in the Royal Library first. Mother is always saying I should read more.
Late that afternoon, Carlana found her daughter in her private chamber. Arianna was kneeling on a chair, elbows rested on a table that was covered with scrolls. More scrolls were carefully stacked in baskets on the floor. Putting a finger to her lips to stop Arianna's maid from announcing her arrival, Carlana tiptoed along the wall to stand behind the heavy drapes.
Look, see, this one's about Aldous Trehame. Oh, it's just about his family line.
Humph. What do you have?
Carlana heard Corin's voice, speaking slowly, because his reading skills were not quite ready for deciphering ancient scrolls.
It says,
something about King Aldous sent
Spell it out, Arianna suggested gently. D-E-L-E-G.
Delegation, Arianna guessed. That means an official party acting in the king's name. Go on.
He sent a delegation to Qingdao,
Corin read carefully.
That's an empire far to the east, a very powerful empire.
The delegation was to seek wizards to help defeat Asador. Mother told me all our wizards were killed in that war, so there were none left to defend the kingdom.
Then where did Pedrus come from? Corin asked, confused, and a little flustered, because Ariana was leaning close, and the warm scent of her perfumed hair was making him dizzy.
Oh, he's from Staed. That's a land far away to the south across the sea. All the wizards from Tarador were killed, so we brought wizards here from foreign lands. Besides, that war was a long time ago.
Go on, Ariana encouraged.
Carlana stepped back from the drapes and whispered to the maid.
My daughter is reading scrolls? Historical scrolls?
Norelka nodded and whispered back.
Yes, ma'am. Been at it most of the day, she has. Her and the boy. They carried the scrolls down from the library, and they've been very careful with them.
Very proper, the two of them. Don't you worry, ma'am. No funny stuff between them. Your daughter knows better, and I think the boy is more than a little afraid to still be in the palace. Afraid of the princess, too.
Carlana peeked around the corner to see Ariana and Corin hunched over a scroll, happily reading the ancient history of Tarador. The regent didn't know how she felt about her daughter spending time with a wizard servant, spending time so closely. But if Corin was indeed to become the most powerful wizard in the land, as Pedrus said, then it was important for Ariana to develop a good relationship now, before they each came into their powers. But the two were not just queen-to-be and potential master wizard. They were also girl and boy. Girl and boy who had shared and survived a traumatic experience, which could naturally draw them closer. The girl, Carlana felt sure, was somewhat infatuated with her hero. The boy, and she knew Corin was a healthy young man, she was actually less worried about. While a boy Corin's age would have feelings about girls, Corin certainly knew that in the end he was a commoner, and Ariana was royalty, and that was the end of it. Just listening to Corin's awkward stammering when he spoke, Carlana had to smile. He looked like he was about to pass out if Ariana got any closer.
Very well. Let them be.
Yes, Mum.
Should I get her dressed for dinner?
Carlana shook her head. This was a good opportunity for the regent to get a closer look at the boy wizard, who would soon be a very important part of her daughter's life.
No, not tonight. I will inform the chief of protocol that I shall dine in my chambers tonight. Tell Ariana I would like her to join me. She can come dressed as she is. And she can bring her friend.
Chapter 5. When Pedrus returned with the army 2 days later, Corin was ready. Standing on the wall above the main gate to the castle, Corin looked down at his new tunic, the same shade of purple that the wizard usually wore, with a yellow lightning bolt down the center as an insignia. When they couldn't find a proper servant's outfit for Corin in the tower, Kyre had his maids cut up an old set of purple drapes to make several sets of tunics for Corin to wear when Corin was going about Lord Salva's official business in the castle. Since a lightning bolt was the court wizard's official insignia, Kyre decided on his own to add one to Corin's official outfits. Corin hoped Pedrus would approve. The army wound its way slowly up the streets of the city, through the gate in the thick walls of the castle. Corin thought he had never seen such a magnificent sight. Horses had been brushed until their coats shone, soldiers with polished armor gleaming, pennants of the nobles to which the various army units belonged, and, at the head of the column, Pedrus and the army unit's captain. The two men waved and smiled and laughed. Pedrus had a sack on his lap, from which he threw candies to the children in the crowd. It was a victorious army that marched in triumph through the gates of the castle.
Corin had not seen the wagon of wounded soldiers, which had sped through the city's less used northern gate ahead of the army, nor the horses that marched without riders, because their masters were dead. It was a day for celebration, an all too rare occasion in the centuries-long war between Tarador and Asador. When Pedros was through the gate, Corin raced down the stairs to greet the wizard. Pedros heartily approved of Corin's new tunic, and never noticed the missing drapes. The wizard was also delighted to see how clean his tower was, although he did suspiciously check the wards on doors to rooms where he didn't want people intruding. Following the official ceremony to welcome the army, there was a feast, and Pedros brought Corin to the royal palace as his servant. Corin's job, according to Cully, was to stand against the wall behind the wizard's chair and keep his master's glass full of wine. Mostly, Corin gawked at the assembled nobility, and had to be poked by the other servants to remind him of his duty. And, of course, he tried to eavesdrop on the conversation between Pedros and Carlana. Corin frowned when he learned the regent and the court wizard did not seem to be on the best of terms. Apparently, Carlana had not wanted to send the army out, and even after the battle, she wasn't sure it had been wise to fight.
"That was a rather grand entrance, Lord Salva," Carlana said, holding a wine glass in front of her lips in an attempt to keep her words private.
"Throwing candy to the children was a bit overdoing it, though, don't you think?"
Pedros gave the regent an unfriendly smile. His lips curled appropriately, but his eyes glared at her.
"The people need to celebrate a victory, Your Highness. It's good for morale. There have been too few victories recently, too many defeats, and far too much of Tarador doing nothing while Isidore's power grows to encircle us.
The important thing is that I located the wizard who sent that bear to kill your daughter, and the force they intended to raid Lavan with in the confusion after Ariana's death. I also sensed a much larger force behind them, beyond the border."
"And it was such an easy victory, Lord Salva," Carlana shot back. "Why, one wonders where was this enemy you warned us about, this terrible threat to the kingdom. Perhaps in the future we can send you alone to fight our battles and save the cost of raising an army."
"Do not underestimate our enemy, Carlana."
Pedros deliberately used her first name.
"We had the advantage of surprise this time. Their raiding force was caught unawares. They thought they were safe, hidden in the Thralrin woods."
Carlana took a sip of wine and spoke from behind the goblet to prevent her voice from carrying.
"The Thralrin woods, according to my army captains, is impassable, and we didn't need to be concerned about an invasion from that direction."
Pedros shrugged.
"So thought Duke Yaren, and those are his woods. His sheriffs patrol those woods, but I think it would be prudent to send, perhaps, 2 dozen rangers to assist Yaren's sheriffs."
2 dozen? Why not 4 dozen, or make it an even 100 rangers? You're always quick to send my troops out to battle."
"I would think you'd like the idea of rangers being in the field, where they can mostly live off the land. Here, in their barracks, you have to pay for their keep."
Pedros saw that remark caused a flash of anger from the regent, so he hastened to continue.
"Yaren would no doubt be grateful for extra protection, and he is one of your strongest allies. Besides, a force of rangers could also train some of Yaren's own troops, so they could eventually be entrusted with the task themselves."
"And a force of rangers, operating on their own, could of course be trusted not to provoke the enemy?" "I think not."
The rangers, a small elite force of the royal army, had a reputation for being aggressive, sometimes to the point of foolishness.
"You defeated the enemy's raiding force. I think we will not face much of a threat for a while."
Pedros could perhaps be forgiven for his rudeness,
for he was very tired. Healing Ariana and Corin, then riding out with the army patrol, destroying the enemy raiding force, battling the enemy wizard, and doing his best to heal the wounded on the long ride back, all had drained his strength. 8 men died in this easy victory you speak of, and many other men were wounded. The enemy has been bold enough to attack us because they sense Tarador is weak. Your late husband Adric knew the threat we face.
Yes, and he died because he followed your advice, Patris Don Salva.
Kalana hissed under her breath.
My charge as regent is to assure Ariana and Tarador survive for her to assume the throne. This war has lasted for many years. I think it can wait until Ariana will become queen, and you can try persuading her to engage in military adventures. I will not go poking sticks into hornets' nests.
Those hornets, dear lady, are going to be setting up their nests right here in this castle if we do not fight them. It is the survival of all Tarador, and not just the Trahaim line, that should concern you.
Kalana was about to reply, when Baroness Sedgwick, alarmed by the argument that had grown loud enough for everyone at Kalana's end of the table to hear, stood up and proposed a toast to the wizard for leading Tarador to victory. The distraction broke the tension, and the royal chamberlain clapped his hands for a troop of musicians and acrobats to perform for the crowd.
Oh, I ate too much. Corin, this is one of the few times I appreciate wearing these silly formal robes. I can loosen the belt and get comfortable. Ah.
The wizard sighed contentedly as he sank back into his favorite chair, in his chamber near the top of the tower.
Corin, sit down, relax. Oh, put some more wood on the fire. And, do we have any more of that wine from Holderness, the sweet red wine? Get the bottle. Oh, and get 2 glasses, if you like sweet wine.
Corin smiled to himself at the wizard's idea of sit down and relax. It seemed to involve a lot of work for his servant. After he walked all the way down the stairs, out the door, and around the backside of the tower to fetch logs from the woodpile, walked back up to the pantry where the wine and glasses were kept, and returned to the wizard, he found the man asleep in the chair, his head lolled to the side, snoring softly. Corin had to set the wine down quickly and cover his mouth to stop from bursting out laughing. He poured a glass of wine, set it on the table next to the wizard, and put a log on the fire. When he closed the door to the stove, the creaking metal woke up the wizard with a startled, interrupted snore.
Snix! Oh! 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 It's you, Corin. I must have dozed off. Why, here's my wine.
Pedras took a sip of the wine.
Ah, that's good. I'm more tired than I thought. It was a very long ride back, with few comforts. And less of a joyous welcome that I had hoped for. That didn't help matters,
he grumbled into his wine glass. Still, most things look better after a good night's sleep, eh? You had best get some rest, too. I hear you're going to a party tomorrow.
Corin was suddenly embarrassed.
The princess is opening her maze in the garden. I hear many people are invited.
Many people, Pedras thought to himself,
but only one commoner servant boy was likely invited.
I hear the princess has been inviting you to dine with her.
Corin nodded, embarrassed. He knew tongues were wagging around the palace about the servant boy who dined with the princess. Jealous, spiteful tongues.
Anyone who thought Corin might have romantic ideas about Ariana were idiots. Commoners, even if they were stupid, did not have romantic notions about royalty.
Certainly not when the royal person was the heir to the throne and held the power of life and death over lowly born commoners.
Corin's people
were peasant farmers who survived only on what they could grow on their land or by illegal hunting in the forests that belonged to the local baron. At harvest time, the sheriff came to collect taxes based on the amount of land being farmed, whether it was a good year for crops or not. If there wasn't enough food left over for the family, they went hungry. Corin wasn't just a commoner. He was a penniless servant, a farm boy who didn't even have a family. Did Corin sometimes get a funny feeling in his stomach, like butterflies when he was around Ariana? Maybe so. When they were sitting around a table, looking at maps, and Ariana leaned close enough that Corin could smell her perfume, and the curls of her hair might brush against his hand, and she looked at him with that cute little smile. Maybe Corin did daydream, just a little, about Ariana, when he wasn't thinking clearly. When he was thinking clearly, he remembered his place, and that place had no business even being around the Crown Princess. So Corin grumbled uncomfortably when Pedras asked him about dining with the princess. She's teaching me about history and maps and stuff. There's a whole building full of scrolls and books which she can borrow. She calls it a library.
Good, good.
Pedras was pleased that Corin was learning about Tarador. There was much the boy needed to know, even before he began his training in a few short years. Sensing that Corin didn't want to talk about Ariana, Pedras changed the subject.
Do you have something appropriate to wear to the party tomorrow?
Yes, sir. The princess, asked Master Fusting to help find clothing for me to wear.
Ha ha! Oh, so you have already had the displeasure of meeting Charles Fusting?
Pedras laughed. The wizard took a big gulp of wine and chuckled to himself. Corin smiled while he recalled Fusting's immense distress at having to deal with finding the proper clothing for a mere grubby servant, a servant who needed clothing fit for an official occasion with the Crown Princess, which was clearly impossible, out of the question, except that she had insisted, and she was the Crown Princess. So Fusting had to do something, and so had scoured the palace for something Corin could wear. The chief of protocol had, after hours of grueling labor, selected several outfits that might, just might, possibly, not be too outrageously horrible if people didn't look too closely. And then, Corin had ruined all of Fusting's simply brilliant work by trying to put on a jacket backwards. The chief of protocol had fainted, and been taken away to rest with cold towels on his forehead and chilled wine to drink. Corin had shrugged and gathered an armful of clothing for Ariana to choose from. The princess had so much fun making him try on outfits that Corin wondered why she had asked Fusting to get involved in the first place.
I met him. Yes, sir.
It was, Corin winked, most irregular.
Ha! Pedras laughed. I wish I had been there. A commoner dining with the Crown Princess? Why, I bet there wasn't anything in his book of protocol to cover that, and Fusting loves referring to that stupid book. Be careful, Corin. You may be the death of that man some day. Oh!
Pedras's jaw stretched wide in a yawn.
I hope you have a good time at the party tomorrow.
You wish to see me, Your Highness? Grand General Magran, commander of the Royal Army, said as he paused at the door and bowed to the Crown Princess.
After the tense dinner party, listening to the regent and the court wizard arguing, all Magran wanted to do was sleep, for soldiers needed to awaken early. He was still wearing his full dress uniform, which was heavy and stiff and uncomfortable. Once long and black, Magran's hair was now grey and cut short, and his full beard partly covered a scar on the right side of his face.
"Yes, General," Ariana replied. "Please, come in, sit down,
I wish to learn more about army strategy.
Tonight?